I'll turn again over to Proverbs, although I have my doubts you'll keep up with how many I'm going to be going through this morning. But there are several that will be reading some longer passages you'll be able to keep up a little bit. This has been an interesting 8-sermon series. It's now on its 27th sermon. That's what the plan was, but there is certainly a lot here. And this morning we're going to be talking about Proverbs and the subject of economics. Now, that's a dangerous thing to talk about because I remember in college taking economics, and there was one sure book to put me to sleep. In fact, I believe that book is still the greatest cure for insomnia that I know of. Grab that book and you'll be asleep in about 5 minutes. But there's a lot we need to know about economics. Now, we need to have a proper perspective about financial affairs to begin with. The first thing I really need to say about the subject is that there is probably nothing more irrelevant from the eternal perspective than your finances. And you're like, what? Well, what did Job say? Job 1:21. You entered this world naked. How are you departing? Okay, you're not taking anything with you. At the same time, there are very few things that are more revealing about your spiritual condition than how you use your finances. Not long after I came to this church, I had a lot of pressure put on me by the chairman of the deacons at that time. He wanted me to speak about church finances because we were in bad shape financially. We had a couple people moving with and went one-third of our total budget income. And that put us in real dire straits. I was even like, could I even buy a box of staples? It was pretty rough. And he wanted me to beef up the giving. So I said, all right, I'll deal with it, but we're going to have a series on it because we need to deal with all the scripture says about finances. I still remember him standing in the back and having quite a look on his face when the subject came up, and the title of the sermon was, God doesn't need your money. Well, I've given several times some multiple sermons on finances, and a plug now for Jim Pagonis. He's going to start a series on finances during Sunday school starting November 4th. It is an important subject. So I'm not going to be covering everything that possibly could be covered, and in many ways this is going to be sort of an overview. We are going to be kind of limited by the time constraints, but we're going to be expanding then on during the Sunday school classes, and that'll go as long as it needs to go. Jim's estimate is between 12 and 20 weeks, depending on your questions and your interests. We want to help you work with your finances in a biblical, godly manner. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a lot here in Proverbs about finances. There are a lot. I was able to identify over 200 verses that deal with, in some way, with the whole idea of economics. What are the sources of wealth? What is wealth? Use of wealth, wisdom, foolishness, and use of finances, business practices, planning, gambling, generosity, greed, diligence, slothfulness, honesty, cheating, loans, surety, and inheritance. So there's a whole lot here in Proverbs. Now, most of the Proverbs are dealing with what we call microeconomics, or your personal finances. But the principles within these certainly apply to macroeconomics, community economy, and even a national economy. Now, that truth is borne out in the fact that historically and in the present, those nations that have followed the biblical principles have done well economically. And those nations that have not have done poorly over time. Now, I throw in the caveat there of over time because there are nations that have come in and done well economically in the short term because they've robbed the wealth of their people or they've robbed the wealth of the surrounding nations that they go conquer them. But as they would stand on their own, they would collapse. Nations that have done this in the past, the communist nations are notorious for this. Nazi Germany did this, but we've also seen the collapse, as we saw those of us old enough, the collapse of the former Soviet Union, the Eastern European satellite nations. Their economy couldn't handle it. They collapsed. Now, this morning, we're going to be focusing just on various verses in Proverbs related to economics. But I do believe that if these principles are understood, even just basically, it's not hard for you to apply them in your own life and even see their application in the wider economic scheme of a national policy. Now, we're going to start off with just some general statements that Proverbs has about rich versus poor. I need to do this because there are still those who have this idea that somehow the poor are superior to the rich. I've actually gotten a little bit of a debate with someone online who's responding to a sermon I had on this some years ago, and she's pointing out Luke 6:20, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of heaven." And so there becomes this idea that the poor are superior spiritually. In fact, there are certain church groups where people will take a vow of poverty because they desire to gain those spiritual blessings that they think poverty brings. But Jesus' teaching, as you examine them, make it very clear, whether you're rich or poor, neither one of those assures you of getting into heaven. And that's not what puts you in God's kingdom. It's faith in the person, the work of the Lord Jesus Christ that saves you, not your economic condition. We also have a lot of people that take the idea that might come out of Luke 6:20, and they have a strange twist to it. While believing the poor have a spiritual advantage, they also believe the rich are supposed to support the poor. Now, I don't understand that because I still haven't figured out, is that because they're jealous of the rich and they just want to get at their money? Or do they really disdain the poor that they might get too much spiritual benefit from being poor? I don't know. Okay? Something's wrong there. But Proverbs says a lot. There are definitely some advantages to having wealth. They're fairly obvious. Proverbs 10:15, "The rich man's wealth is his fortress, the ruin of the poor is their poverty." If you've ever done a missions trip or lived in that yourself, my parents both grew up in poverty. Real poverty, not what people call it today. My mother's family, they were fortunate enough to live next to a grocery market, and the man was kind enough to leave out some of the vegetables that were going bad so they could get them. My aunt tells me that when they were growing up during the Depression, that they had no idea they were poor. Everybody was as bad as they were. You didn't mind bugs being in anything. You'd sift them out. Or just eat them. There's a little extra protein. They didn't mind a worm being in an apple. They just didn't like it when it was half a worm. There was this utter poverty. They didn't have anything. Those who've done that, you've seen the ruin that poverty can bring. Proverbs 19:4, "Wealth adds many friends, but a poor man is separated from his friend." Or Proverbs 14:20, "The poor man is hated even by his neighbor, but those who love the rich are many." There are some advantages. But as Proverbs 22, verse 2 points out, both are equal before God. "The rich and the poor have a common bond. The Lord is the maker of them all." There's no difference in his eyes. In fact, we also find Proverbs that warn that wealth can be a hindrance. Proverbs 8:11, "A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall in his own imagination. He thinks it's something it's not." Trusting in riches, in fact, can be very dangerous. Proverbs 11:28 says, "He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf." The pride that arises with wealth can also blind them. Proverbs 28:11, "The rich man is wise in his own eyes, but the poor who has understanding sees through him." So even if it has advantages, it doesn't mean it's necessarily better. Now, in our materialistic society, there are many that pursue wealth. It certainly is a temptation to us. We certainly fall into that very easily. The rich do have advantages, but it must be kept in mind that there are many things that are much more important than having wealth. Let me go over some of the things that Proverbs says about it. Wisdom and understanding, Proverbs 3:13 and 14 and 15. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding, for her profit is better than the profit of silver, her gain better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with her. Which would you rather have, wealth or wisdom? I'll take wisdom. How about the fear of the Lord? Proverbs 15:16. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Integrity, a good name. Proverbs 28:6. Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. Proverbs 22:1. A good name is to be more desired than great wealth. Favor is better than silver or gold. How about humility, righteousness? Proverbs 16:19, it is better to be humble in spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Or 16:8, better is a little with righteousness than great income with injustice. Wealth is not all it's cracked up to be. How about love? Or just peace in the home? Proverbs 15:17, better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fatted ox served with hatred. Tragically, there's a lot of families. That is the way it is. Proverbs 17:1, better is a dry morsel in quietness than a house full of feasting with strife. There are things more important than wealth. Keep that in mind. Now, part of the problems in economics is what people pursue in order to gain wealth. Now, people can become personally rich by evil means. Murder, stealing, in fact, Proverbs 1:10-19 begins with a warning against that. They can gain that, but they also place themselves at great risk. Proverbs 13:17 warns that wealth obtained by fraud dwindles. You may have gotten it, but it's going to go down. Proverbs 28:8 warns that he who increases wealth by interest and usury gathers it for him who is gracious to the poor. You're not keeping it. When the means of gaining wealth is at the unjust expense of others, the net loss in the economy is great, and the sinful individual places himself under the wrath of God. Now, there are righteous ways to gain wealth through God's blessing. Proverbs 10:22 is key to this. It is the blessing of the Lord that makes rich, and he adds no sorrow to it. Whenever wealth you have has come from God's blessing, there's nothing negative in it. It really is a blessing. Well, what are the righteous means of doing so? Proverbs points that out. How about wisdom? Proverbs 18:8 proclaims, riches and honor are with me, wisdom is speaking here, enduring wealth and righteousness. Earn it through wisdom. How about knowledge? Proverbs 24:4, and by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. How about humility? Proverbs 22:4, the reward of humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, life. Righteousness, which we'll expand on quite a bit a little later in the sermon. Proverbs 11:18, he who sows righteousness gets a true reward. And 15:6, great wealth is in the house of the righteous. Here's a word some people don't like, work, and diligence in it. These are righteous ways. The hand, or he, the one who gathers by labor increases wealth. Proverbs 10:4, the hand of the diligent makes rich. Faithfulness. Proverbs 28:20, a faithful man will abound with blessings. And then inheritance. Some people seem to think that gaining an inheritance is a terrible way to get wealth. Well, you know what? Parents work pretty hard trying to gain so that their family can succeed. And it's a righteous way to gain wealth, is an inheritance. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, the grandkids. That's Proverbs 13:22. The greatest blessing, though, is not the amount of wealth. There's something else that comes with it. Remember, it's the blessing of the Lord that makes you wealthy, and there's no sorrow in it. It's because there's a contentment that comes when you're doing it the right way. Proverbs 18:20 says, with the fruit of a man's mouth, his stomach will be satisfied. He'll be satisfied with the product of his lips. That was Jesus' point in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6, 19 through 34, of not to worry about food, clothing, shelter. Instead, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. He wants our focus to be on him. He'll take care of all the rest of it. He doesn't even want you fretting and worrying about your daily needs, the real needs. He'll take care of it. The focus needs to be on him. There's a contentment there that can't be gained any other way. Proverbs 13:25 says, "The righteous has enough to satisfy his appetite, but the stomach of the wicked is in need." Contentment. Proverbs 10:3, "The Lord will not allow the righteous to hunger, but he will reject the craving of the wicked." So if we are focused doing it right, gaining whatever wealth we have the right ways that are honoring to God, then it comes with contentment. If we're going the other direction, you're not going to have contentment. It will become a curse to you. Now, another area that has an effect on the ability to gain wealth is how you plan for it. Forethought, planning out versus being hasty. Proverbs 21:5 says, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty surely comes to poverty." Have you thought through the issues? An example of this comes in Proverbs 20:21, and that actually brings to mind Jesus' story of the prodigal son in Luke 15:11-32. "An inheritance gained hurriedly at the beginning will in the end not be blessed." Wasn't that the story of the prodigal son? His father gave him his inheritance early. He had to have it. He squandered the whole thing and ended up in poverty, longing for what the pigs were eating because it was better than what he had. A wicked element in the hurry to gain wealth will bring about an even greater negative consequence, according to Proverbs 28, verse 20. "A faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who makes haste to be rich will not go unpunished." That's actually one of the many things that is wrong with gambling. What's behind it? A greed, a selfishness, a desire to get rich quick. It does not go unpunished. Proverbs 24, verse 27 explains the need for planning. "Prepare your work outside and make it ready for yourself in the field. Afterwards, then build your house." In other words, there has to be priorities in how you're going to do things, right? And it is much more important to have a source of food and have a source of income than having a comfortable house. You know what? If you have to live in a tent for a while, live in a tent. But make sure the other things of what's going to help you in the future are set. There's priorities. One of the great problems in our society is priorities are not kept. People squander what they have because they're after the wrong thing. And then they're in trouble. It's important to plan according to God's priorities. Proverbs 16:3, "Commit your works to the Lord and your plans will be established." Now, throughout Proverbs, there is a contrast between wisdom and righteousness and foolishness and wickedness. And so it's no surprise that Proverbs has a lot to say about these in terms of finances. Sound economic and business practice arise out of wisdom and righteousness, while poor economics and unethical business practices follow foolishness and wickedness. From the very first chapter in Proverbs, the book calls on the reader to follow wisdom, verses 2 through 9. It calls on the reader to avoid foolishness, the foolishness of the wicked, verses 10 through 19. Wisdom goes on, it shouts the naive, it calls the fools and scoffers, "Turn aside and learn to me." The sad thing is that so few do, and their waywardness, their complacency lead to their own destruction, as described in verse 32. The prosperity of the righteous begins with honoring the Lord. A lot of you have memorized Proverbs 3, 9, and 10. "Honor the Lord from your wealth, from the first of all your produce, and so your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine." Now, we've got to remember, in an agricultural society, your wealth was in the storage of the things that you'd produced on your farm. So this is wealth. But where does it begin? Honoring the Lord from your wealth. Well, what is this talking about in specific? Well, the reference to the first of all your produce is specifically referring to a required tithe upon the Jewish people. It's in Exodus 22, 29, 23, 19. A tithe on the first fruits. Whatever is first needs to go into the Lord's house. It was a tithe. Honoring the Lord with your wealth includes everything listed out in Deuteronomy 12, verse 6. What's included there? Offerings, sacrifices, the various tithes, contributions, votive offerings, free will offerings, as well as the first of the offspring of all the animals. All those things are ways to honor the Lord from your wealth. Now, as Christians under the new covenant, we are not under the law and its required tithes and sacrifices. We are to give freely and joyously. The principles for us are laid down in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. Now this I say, he who sows sparingly shall also reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully shall also reap bountifully. Let each one do just as he purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. So giving for us is a voluntary act of worship. That's why your attitude is so important within it. It's to be done with joy, not as some sort of oppressive obligation. You give as you decide, but it would be a great error to think that somehow your finances will improve if you withhold from the Lord. It's not true. It'll go the opposite direction. Hoarding your wealth, spending it on yourself, only shows selfishness, which the Lord actually will curse. Proverbs 14:11 says, the house of the wicked will be destroyed, but the tent of the upright will flourish. So it's the attitude that's behind all that. Proverbs 3:27-33 goes on and explains further why it is necessary to do good and avoid evil. Look there, Proverbs 3, starting verse 27. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it is your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, tomorrow I'll give it, when I have it and when you have it with you. It's there and you're withholding it? This is evil. Goes on, do not devise harm against your neighbor while he lives securely beside you. Do not contend with a man without cause if he's done you no harm. Do not envy a man of violence, and do not choose any of his ways, for the devious are an abomination of the Lord, but he is intimate with the upright. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. So righteousness versus wickedness is really what's at issue here when it comes to finances. And we'll continue to see this throughout the rest of our study of Proverbs this morning. But even apart from the Lord's blessings and curses, righteousness and wickedness earn opposite wages. Proverbs 10:16, the wages of righteousness is life, the income of the wicked is punishment. Proverbs 11:8, the wicked earns deceptive wages, but he who sows righteousness gets a true reward. Proverbs 15:6, great wealth is in the house of the righteous, but trouble is the income of the wicked. That's what they're earning. Proverbs also explains the reasons the wicked have such troubles. Proverbs 13:18, poverty and shame will come upon who neglects discipline, but he regards reproof will be honored. In other words, they don't do what they should do, and they reject the correction of it. Second, they use what they do have foolishly. Proverbs 21:20, there is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up. He consumes it. It's gone. David ran into this in Africa. The culture there among a lot of the tribal people is when they get something, you know, they're successful in a hunt, they gobble it down, and then the rest of the week they're hungry. It was there. They don't know what to do with it. They foolishly squander it. But it gets worse for them. Proverbs 13:21. Adversity pursues sinners, but the righteous will be rewarded with prosperity. Trouble follows them. It seeks them out. But it's related to wickedness versus righteousness. Wicked also get into trouble because they place their hope in their wealth, and that's a very weak protection. Proverbs 18:11 says, "A rich man's wealth is a strong city and like a high wall in his own imagination." His wealth gives him this delusion of protection, but it's going to crash. We've seen that here in our own nation. We had a lot of people who got hurt really bad in 2008, 2009. They thought they were set up for retirement. The economy crashed, and here are all these investments, and poof, it's gone. 65, 70, and they're going back to work at McDonald's because they're trying to put some food on the table. They thought this is great protection. I got all this wealth, and poof, it's gone. Proverbs 11:28 says, "He who trusts in his riches will fall." It's going to collapse. Proverbs 11:4, "Riches do not profit in the day of wrath." Proverbs 28:22, "A man with an evil eye hastens after wealth and does not know want will come upon him." In the same passage, there's a contrast for the righteous. 11:28, "The righteous will flourish like a green leaf." The righteous delivers, righteousness delivers from death, 11:4 and 18:10. "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and are safe." I want my security to be in God, not in my bank account, not in my investments. And I know all the, you know, you try and be wise, because you are trying to accumulate something for inheritance of your grandkids. But we have to realize any of that stuff, as Jesus pointed out in the Sermon on the Mount, can be stolen. It can rot. It's gone. My hope has got to be in the Lord, not my bank account. Well, righteousness and wickedness comes out in business practices too. And we live in a, it's something that I've seen change in my lifetime. Some of you are a little older or my age or so, you may remember your parents doing their business on a handshake. You trusted each other. Integrity was everything. Now we've got teams of lawyers, and they can't even hold people to contracts. There's an unethical aspect to our business practices. It comes from wickedness. How a person conducts their business reveals their character. Is it righteous? Is it wicked? Now, wicked generally think they're going to gain more through these unethical business practices. And often that may be true in the very short term, but in the long term, it is going to collapse. And let me be clear that these principles apply not only to commercial businesses, they also apply to nonprofits. Churches are nonprofits. Educational institutions are nonprofits. And it applies to governments. Now, the greater difficulty with a government that practices unethical behavior is that they don't go out of business quickly. If they did, we would change governments and we could have an improvement. But instead, they raise taxes, or in the case of the federal government, which they're doing again, print lots of money. We will simply cover the cost of our corruption and losses by deflating everything. The value of what we have is less. Why is our gas so expensive? Because we printed so much money that those selling it, no, it's not worth a whole lot. They raise the price to try to keep it even. So they still have somewhat of the same value. Called inflation. Now, the Lord starts off with a basic concern about just honesty. We would hope when we're doing business we are dealing with honest people, but so often we find out we're not. We find all sorts of things we're trying to protect ourselves from dishonesty. Proverbs 16:11 says, "A just balance and scales belong to the Lord, and all the weights of the bag are his concern." Proverbs 11:1, 20:10, and 20:23 all deal with balances and scales for measuring. A false balance, differing weights and measures are abominations to God, while a just weight is his delight. Nobody wants to go out and pay for 15 gallons of gasoline and only get 14. You don't want to go and buy a 10-pound roast and get home and it's only 9 pounds. Right? It's fraud. You've had it stolen from you. We seek to protect ourselves from the unscrupulous by having agencies certify scales and measures, but the unethical have all sorts of other ways to beat the system. Proverbs warns about that. Lying in all of its forms, including fraud, are part of this. The Lord hates a lying tongue, Proverbs 6:6 6:17, with Proverbs 21:6 warning, the acquisition of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and the pursuit of death. That's fairly strong, isn't it? Now, falsehood, or what we might call deceptive advertising, there's a lot of deceptive advertising, can be done by either the buyer or the seller. Proverbs 20:14 touches on this. Bad, bad, says the buyer. But when he goes away, he boasts. He's lying about it. He wanted to get the deals. So he's deceptive. Proverbs 20:17 warns about the negative consequence of this. Bread obtained by falsehood is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth is filled with gravel. It's not so sweet later. Another form of lying is fraud. Fraud is an intentional perversion of the truth in order to misrepresent, to deceive. Proverbs 13:11 says, wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers by labor increases it. Now, this word fraud is an interesting word. It's also translated vanity. It's also translated as flattery. Flattery is fraud. It's given purposely to deceive. Proverbs 26:28 warns, a lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Proverbs 29:5, a man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps. These are the people who appeal to your ego as a means of setting you up to be their victim. Lying, falsehood, fraud. We generally have made a caricature of used car salesmen, that this is their business practices, so we make lots of jokes about it. But frankly, what I keep watching by the promises made by politicians get elected, I think they make used car salesmen look like amateurs. What is it? It goes back to ethics. Is it righteousness or wickedness? Another unethical business practice is changing the rules or manipulating the law to bring about an unjust decision in your favor. Proverbs 28:22 warns, do not move the ancient boundary which your father set. Ancient boundaries were marked by either a pillar or they had stacked stones, and that was the line of the property. Well, if that was set by your great-grandfather and you haven't been out to look at this in a while, you may not know where it really is. So your neighbor comes along and he shifts it, moves it over 30 or 40 feet. Well, guess what? He just gained a whole lot of land, didn't he? That was a big problem. It's still a big problem in some places where that's the way they mark their boundaries. We're a little more sophisticated. We actually write down a description of it in surveys, but that doesn't mean there's still not corrupt surveyors out there who will ease a line over. It doesn't mean that in the government you don't have corrupt people who will change it, the record. These things happen. Moving boundaries was strictly prohibited in Deuteronomy 19:14, but this kind of manipulation still goes on. Remember that just because something is legal doesn't make it ethical or just. We have a whole lot of laws in our books that are not just. They're not ethical. God is the final judge. He determines justice, not man. Proverbs 13:23 has a very interesting statement about this. Abundant food is in the fallow ground of the poor, but it is swept away by injustice. Fallow ground is ground that nothing's planted in. It's just whatever happens to be growing up. Some sort of injustice is keeping the poor from being able to plant and use their own land to grow their food. And this stuff still happens. Being involved with agriculture, I still remember there was a big deal in California years ago when I was still in college of a man, he had been tilling his field for years. Suddenly the EPA came in and says he can't plow this whole section of his land because the kangaroo rat was there, which is an endangered species. I've been plowing this thing for years, and the rat is there. So obviously my plowing isn't really harming the rat. But he can't plow his field anymore. His land was stolen from him. He wasn't given compensation. We have a house down the street. All the permits were done. Everything was approved. Then someone said, oh, wait a minute, this is on wetlands. They still can't occupy the house. This is injustice. These kinds of things still happen. Now, the blatantly wicked are obvious. But there are also those who cooperate with them, and they are also guilty. Proverbs 29:24 says, "He who is a partner with a thief hates his own life. He hears the oath and tells nothing." The Proverbs shows that one who covers up the crime is as culpable and subject to punishment as the one who committed the crime. Wickedness and its unethical business practice may work in the short term, but again, not in the long. Proverbs 28:22, "A man with an evil eye hastens after wealth and does not know want will come upon him." It brings with it trouble, and eventually the Lord will judge. Proverbs 15:27, "He who profits illicitly troubles his own house." Proverbs 22:22-23, "Do not rob the poor because he is poor or crush the afflicted at the gate, for the Lord will plead their case and take the life of those who rob them." That's pretty serious. Proverbs 10:2, "The ill-gotten gains do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death." Now, another element when it comes to economics, finances, is diligence versus being a sluggard. It's, again, a revelation of whether you're wicked or righteous. Proverbs 14:23 says, again, "In all labor there is profit. Mere talk leads to poverty." Are you diligent or just a talker? That's a sluggard. Proverbs 6:6-11 is the most extensive passage on this. This is where Solomon points out, go to the ant. "Go to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise, which, having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer, gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man." Stolen from you. Consider these portions of various Proverbs that point out the blessings of being diligent. "The hand of the diligent makes rich," 10:4. "He who tills his land will have plenty of bread," 12:11 and 28:19. "He who tends the fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who cares for his master will be honored," 27:18. "The soul of the diligent is made fat," 13:4. Now remember that in the process of this kind of production, of earning wealth, of being productive, you'll probably make a mess. And so one of my favorite proverbs is Proverbs 14:4, "Where no oxen are, the manger is clean, but much increase comes by the strength of the ox." So thank God for that mess. There's increase coming from it. I actually have that on a plaque hanging in my office. That's my excuse for the appearance of my office. Now consider these portions and the consequences to sluggards from Proverbs. "Poor is he who works with a negligent hand," 10:4. "The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing," 13:4. "Poverty and shame will come to him who neglects discipline," 13:18. "He who follows empty pursuits will have poverty in plenty." Yeah, they're wealthy in poverty. 15:19. "Laziness casts into a deep sleep, and the idle man will suffer hunger," 19:15. "The desire of the sluggard puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work," 21:25. In Proverbs 22:13 and 26:13, we find the sluggard will find any excuse not to work. "There's a lion in the street." There's no lion in the street. "But there could be. I'm not going out there." Well, why not be a man and go out and deal with a lion? If you want to deal with it alone, get your friends. Do something about it. No, any excuse not to work. And the greater problem with the sluggard, you can't correct them. Proverbs 26:16, "The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer." He's wise in his own eyes. There is no hope. Now, when a person is righteous, they're also going to be generous. When they're wicked, you're going to find they're going to be greedy or gluttonous or a combination of them. It's, again, a revelation of their character. That has a definite consequence on their finances. Now, greed and gluttony are both selfish. The difference is that greed will hoard wealth and the glutton consumes it. But both are selfish. Proverbs 11:24 says, "There is one who scatters and yet increases all the more. And there's one who withholds what is justly due and yet results only in want. The difference between generosity and hoarding. Greed. Now, it almost seemed counterintuitive that being generous and giving to those in need will result in your own increase. But that is exactly what Proverbs says, because that is the Lord's blessing. Now remember, what is the source of wealth? Well, if you're doing it righteously, it's going to be the Lord's blessing upon you. He's going to take care of that. Now these various proverbs or portions express this truth. The generous man will be prosperous, 11:25. He who is gracious to the needy honors his maker, 14:31. One who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deed, 19:17. He who gives the poor will never want, 28:27. Now this kindness, this generosity, it even extends to enemies. Proverbs 25:21-22. If your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink, for you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. Now, Paul quotes this in Romans 12:20. Jesus expands on the principle in Matthew 5:44-48. We're to love even our enemies. And be careful here, because this idea of heaping coals on their heads is not a punishment of some sort. Fire was a very important commodity, and when you didn't have a good fire, where did you get it? You didn't have a lighter, a Bic lighter or anything like that. You didn't have a match. You had to get a fire from somewhere. You often went to your neighbor. You got embers from him. You carried it home. Where did people in the ancient world carry whatever they're carrying? And a bowl on top of their head. It's a blessing. So don't think that in doing this somehow you're getting revenge. It's not about revenge. It's about being what God wants you to be. Generous and kind and righteous. Let the Lord take care of the vengeance, which as Paul says in Romans 12. Now, man's selfish bent leads him to believe that greed and gluttony are somehow going to lead to his happiness, but they don't. In fact, friendship with selfish people doesn't lead to happiness either. Proverbs 23:6-8 warns about that. Even if the greedy gain wealth, well, it quickly disappears in a multitude of ways. Proverbs 23:4-5 says this, "Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings, and like an eagle it flies away toward the heavens." Remember last time you got a raise? Do you remember that having any effect on you? Suddenly it was gone. Poof. Man, it went faster than I got it, because I got a bill in that was even higher than my raise. Wealth goes quickly. Hedonists, those who seek after pleasure, consume the wealth they gain, and so they actually lose the means to gain more pleasure. They don't have it anymore. They've consumed it all. Proverbs 21:17, "He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich." They've consumed it. Proverbs 23:7-21 warn about friendship with heavy drinkers and gluttons, because that will lead to your own poverty. You'll start doing what they do, and you will consume your own wealth. And because the eyes of a man are never satisfied, as Proverbs 27:20 states, even the satisfaction that is gained by the greedy or glutton is very brief. How much is enough? Wasn't that asked to, one of the Rockefellers? How much was enough? $1 more. Always $1 more. There's never enough. There's no satisfaction. Proverbs 21:13-28:17 warned that those who shut their eyes and ears to the poor will have many curses. And when it comes to themselves, they will cry and they will not be answered. Righteousness results in generosity. Wickedness in greed and hedonism, gluttony. Now, one last area I want to touch on very briefly are loans and surety. I could do a whole sermon just on this, but just in brief. It is not a sin to lend or to borrow, but recognize the dangers of it. We go boldly forward, not recognizing these are dangerous things. We've already seen that the righteous are generous. So when those who have wealth make a loan, then they have to be helpful. They cannot be oppressive. They can't be those who charge usury. Proverbs 22:16 says, "He who oppresses the poor to make more for himself or gives the rich will only come to poverty." Proverbs 28:8, "He who increases his wealth by interest and usury gathers it for him who is gracious to the poor." Now, usury is excessive interest. The easiest way to explain that is compare a second-level credit card rate with a bank loan rate. They're extremely different, right? I'm not sure what those are currently. What's a bank loan running, 6-8%, somewhere in there? A house loan, I know, is down to 3-4%, but a regular bank loan, maybe for a car. But if your credit cards, man, you better watch out. Some of those things go up to in the 20, even to 30%, plus penalties. That's usury. Now, if there's a very simple thing. If you're going to lend, and this also includes, remember, investing is also a lending. It's the same idea, but hope you're going to get a return on it. Never lend or invest more than you can afford to lose, because you may well lose it. Second, if you are the borrower, understand you place yourself at risk. Proverbs 22:7 says, "The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave." In this time period, that could be actual. You do become their slave. Why? Because you're obligated to pay it back. Even if your circumstances flip and you are poor, you're still obligated to pay it back. That's why in the ancient world, you could be sold into slavery to pay your bill. Psalm 37:21 says, "It's the wicked that do not repay." So when it comes to bankruptcy, that's not an option for us as Christians. You may be forced into it by your creditors, but it's not something you seek for relief. You have an obligation to pay back what you borrowed. Now, that also means there's less risk with the more collateral you have against the loan, and increasing risk when there's little collateral against the loan. So what we would call consumer loans, credit cards, car loans, furniture loans, that kind of stuff, you're going to consume what you borrow the money to get, are more risky than capital loans, investment loans, houses, land, things like that. Well, I say houses, but houses fluctuate up and down too, but generally they're a little more stable. There is some value there that if you got into trouble, you could sell the value and repay your loan. There is risk involved. Understand the risk. Loans that are taken out should only be taken out with great caution. Understand the risk. And loans that are taken out to fulfill desires instead of actual real needs is foolishness, because it's going to put you back in the camp of being greedy, being gluttonous. I have to have it now. You're not planning properly. That will lead to poverty. If you take something out on a loan, remember, whatever it is you're purchasing is costing you a whole lot more than if you saved and then purchased it. Now, there's also the issue of surety. We more commonly refer to this as co-signing for a loan. Now, that easily becomes a problem as pointed out in Proverbs 22, 26, and 27. Do not be among those who give pledges, among those who become guarantors for debts, if you have nothing with which to pay, why should he take your bed from under you? You just committed yourself to repay something you have no control over because someone else has it. You're at risk. And that's why in Proverbs 6, 1 through 5, you find this plea from the father to his son who had gotten himself into the situation is, get out of it. Plead. Humble yourself. Get out of this position you've gotten yourself into. Deliver yourself from the pledge. As Proverbs 17:18 warns, a man lacking in sense pledges and becomes guarantor in the presence of his neighbor. Be very careful of that. I've seen that getting a lot of people in trouble. Now, this is, again, as a brief overview. Any of these areas could be expanded on. In fact, I was setting this, I thought we could end up with, okay, we got an 8-part series on finances, but Jim's going to be doing that. So I'm going to encourage you, Sunday school starting November 4th is going to start a whole series on finances. How do we put all these principles into action? God does want you to be blessed, But it really is going to come back down to this again, isn't it? Economic health boils down to righteousness versus wickedness. It's not your financial acumen. People who are shrewd financially, but are also wicked, again, they may gain wealth in a short term, but long term, it's not going to be there. And even if they do keep it a while, like the Psalms in Psalm 73 is looking at the rich who are wicked, they're still going to have to face God. And their wealth will not deliver them from his hand. Understand as well, their very selfishness removes the contentment and robs them the joy and the satisfaction even while there is that wealth. I pointed that out earlier. In the end, they face God and then it's all gone. If you want to be a success financially, then pursue wisdom, pursue righteousness, and let it be God's blessing that makes you rich in all things that are truly important, both here on this earth and in eternity. We go back to Proverbs 3:13-15. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For her profit is better than the profit of silver, her gain better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with her. In the same chapter, verse 33, the Lord blesses the dwelling of the righteous.